Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 6. Ajopisa Navayatma Bhutanam Isharopisan Prakritim Swam Adishtaya Sambhavam Yatma Maya Aja, unborn, api, although, son, being so, avyaya, without deterioration, atma, body, bhutanam, of all those who are born, Ishvaraha, the Supreme Lord, api, although, son, being so, prakritim, and the transcendental form, swam, of myself, adishtaya, being so situated, sambhavami, I do incarnate, atmamaya, by my internal energy. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Purport. The Lord has spoken about the peculiarity of His birth. Although He may appear to be like an ordinary person, He remembers everything of His many, many past births. Whereas the common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. Someone has asked what he did exactly at the same time one day earlier. It would be very difficult for a common man to answer immediately. He would surely have to dredge his memory to recall what he was doing exactly at the same time one day before. Yet men often dare claim to be God or Krishna. One should not be misled by such meaningless claims. Then again, the Lord explains His prakriti, or His form. Prakriti means nature as well as swarup, or one's own form. The Lord says that He appears in His own body. He does not change His body, as a common living entity changes from one body to another. The conditioned soul may have one kind of body in the present birth, but he has a different body in the next birth. In the material world, the living entity has no fixed body, but transmigrates from one body to another. The Lord, however, does not do so. Whenever He appears, He does so in the same original body, by His internal potency. In other words, Krishna appears in this material world in His original eternal form, with two hands holding a flute. He appears exactly in His eternal body, uncontaminated by this material world. Although He appears in the same transcendental body and is the Lord of the universe, it still appears that He takes His birth like an ordinary living entity. And although His body does not deteriorate like a material body, it still appears that Lord Krishna grows from childhood to boyhood and from boyhood to youth. But astonishingly enough, He never ages beyond youth. At the time of the Battle of Kurukshetra, He had many grandchildren at home. Or in other words, He had sufficiently aged by material calculations. Still, He looked just like a young man, 20 or 25 years old. We never see a picture of Krishna in old age, because He never grows old like us, although He is the oldest person in the whole creation, past, present, and future. Neither his body nor his intelligence ever deteriorates or changes. Therefore, it's clear that in spite of his being in the material world, he is the same unborn, eternal form of bliss and knowledge, changeless in his transcendental body and intelligence. Factually, his appearance and disappearance is like that of the sun rising, moving before us, and then disappearing from our eyesight. When the sun is out of sight, we think that the sun is set, and when the sun is before our eyes, we think that the sun is on the horizon. Actually, the sun is always in its fixed position, but owing to our defective, insufficient senses, we calculate the appearance and disappearance of the sun in the sky. Because Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are completely different from that of any ordinary common living entity, it is evident that he is eternal, blissful knowledge by his internal potency, and he is never contaminated by material nature. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unborn, yet he still appears to take his birth in multi-manifestations. The Vedic supplementary literatures also confirm that even though the Lord appears to be taking his birth, he is still without change of body. In the Bhagavatam, he appears before his mother as Narayan, with four hands, with decorations of six kinds of full opulences. His appearance in his original eternal form is his causeless mercy, bestowed upon the living entities so they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as he is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations, which the impersonalists wrongly think the Lord's forms to be. The word Maya or Atma Maya refers to the Lord's causeless mercy according to the Vishva Kosha Dictionary. The Lord is conscious of all his previous appearances and disappearances, but a common living entity forgets everything about his past body as soon as he gets another body. He is the Lord of all living entities because he performs wonderful and superhuman activities while he is on this earth. Therefore, the Lord is always the same absolute truth and is without differentiation between his form and self, between his quality and his body. Question may now be raised as to why the Lord appears and disappears in this world. This is explained in the next verse. Ajopi san avyatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamadishtaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So these verses are an answer to Arjuna's question. Apare bhavati janma param janma vivashvataha katam etad vijaniyam tvam ado proktavaniti. So Arjuna is curious because Krishna said at the beginning of this chapter, of course, the Bhagavad Gita is not really divided into chapters in one sense. When Krishna was speaking to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he didn't say, now I'll talk to you about the summary of the Gita. And now that you've understood that, now we're on Karma Yoga. Are you taking notes? And now we're starting with transcendental knowledge. It was a continuous flow of conversation, and Krishna is very systematic. Since he's been speaking the Bhagavad Gita since time immemorial, he has a lot of practice. He's organized his seminar quite well. Made a few mistakes at the beginning, but he's corrected them 500 trillion years later. So it seems that it's so systematically organized that it can be broken down into 18 chapters. But this chapter, Krishna begins with Imam Vishvate Yogam Proktavanaham Avyam Vivashvan Manave Praha Manor Ishvakave Bravit. That many millions of years ago, and according to the purport, Prabhupada calculates it as 120 million years ago, Krishna spoke to the sun god. Now, as with many parts of the Bhagavad Gita, or the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Krishna book, when we hear these things, we don't protest, because we'd be considered to be a bad devotee if we protested. But to many of us, it seems more like a fairy tale. Sure, 120 million years ago, yeah, right. He could have said 120 billion years ago, we would have had the same reaction. It doesn't register. 120. If we can live to 100 years, we consider to be ourselves be quite fortunate. We've lived so long. And yet 120 years ago, the sun god was having his 50th birthday. And what to speak of Brahma? Brahma lives for 111 trillion, 40 billion years. With a little change left over. In any case, Arjuna is quite surprised, because Arjuna at least had a reaction. He wasn't afraid. Sure, Krishna, right. 120 million years ago, you spoke to the sun god. Right. And I guess you had your sun suit on when you were doing it. But Arjuna was bold enough to question Krishna. That the sun god, Krishna is saying, Arjuna is saying, I'm senior by birth to you. I was born before you. How is it possible that you could have spoken to the sun god? You were 40, 50 years ago. You weren't even born. So how did you speak to the sun god 120 million years ago? So now Krishna answers Arjuna, Ajopisan Navyatma Bhutanam Ishvaropisan. That many, many births I have taken, Krishna says. Although I am unborn, my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that his body is transcendental. Now, if someone comes up to you on the street and says, you know, by the way, I remember your birth 5 million years ago. And you go, really? Are you sure? Yes, because my body is transcendental. It never deteriorates. So we may wonder and question, it looks like you have a material body. Can you also move the sun and the moon? And usually they say yes. They said, can you move the sun a little bit over there? It's shining in my eyes right now. They said, well, I could do it, but I don't want to. If I wanted to, I could. Of course, it's very difficult to get them to want to do it. You never get them to want to do it. They only theoretically talk about it. But Krishna is making a very bold statement that my body is eternal. Now, of course, it's not so unusual, because from the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, at least from the beginning of the second chapter, Krishna has already explained that everyone's body is eternal. At least the spiritual body is eternal. So the possibility of someone having a spiritual body is not impossible. As a matter of fact, it's the only possible explanation for the fact that we're not changing in spite of all the changes of our material body and minds, intelligence. So, the existence of spiritual bodies is a given fact, but the fact that Krishna has a spiritual body, is not unusual because everyone else has one. But the fact that he has a spiritual body that is eternal, that doesn't change, well, of course, no one's spiritual body changes, but he doesn't have a material body like we have. And that he could speak in the same body he's speaking to Arjuna, to the sun god 120 million years ago. While we ourselves, we have spiritual bodies now covered by temporary material bodies. Of course, even Krishna's liberated souls like Narada Muni don't have material bodies like we have. They have eternal spiritual bodies. They're not God. Narada Muni's not God, but still he can exist without a material body. And believe it or not, we can also exist without a material body. As a matter of fact, we will exist without this material body very shortly. So though we believe wrongly that we can exist without our present material body, but actually we exist much better when we're not getting material bodies one after another, then our real existence comes forth. In any case, due to the illusory energy, we believe that we are a material body, and without this material body, we cease to exist. So that's called illusion. And of course, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to not only end that illusion, but to end the illusion that we have some separate existence outside of our relationship with Krishna. It's not that when we become Krishna conscious, then our relation with Krishna develops. Of course it develops, it always develops. But it's not that we get a relationship with Krishna when we get a spiritual body. We eternally have a relation with Krishna. Matter of fact, we can't exist without a relationship with Krishna. Even right at this present moment, unless Krishna gives us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness, we can't do anything. We don't know how to move. We don't know how to speak. We don't even know what we're seeing. We don't know what we're hearing. So eternally we have a relation with Krishna. The only difference is right now we're either unaware of that relationship with Krishna, or we're denying it even exists. Devotees, aspiring devotees, they admit that they're unaware of their relation with Krishna. And non-devotees, they say it doesn't even exist. That's the difference between aspiring devotees and non-devotees. One class is unaware of their relation with Krishna, and the other, they know they have a relationship with Krishna, but they know they're unconscious of what that relationship is. But Krishna's coming, and he spoke to the sun god 120 million years ago, and now he's speaking to Arjuna. Now the next question is, why is Krishna taking the trouble to come around millennium after millennium? Does he hope that maybe in the future things will get better? It wasn't so good with the sun god. It was a little too hot. He's hoping it would cool down. So he came back and spoke to Arjuna because he hoped the weather improved. So Krishna will explain in the next verse why he comes and what he does. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sridhamyaham. And then Krishna will explain paritranaya sarunam vinashaya tatriskitam dharma samstapanarataya sambhavam yuge yuge. And then we get to the prati bhasha sloka of the Bhagavad Gita, janma karma chame divyam, which is what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about, that if we actually accept that Krishna has a spiritual body and he's coming to deliver the conditioned souls, protect the devotees, annihilate the non-devotees, and establish religious principles, we actually understand what Krishna's mission is, and we decide to cooperate with Krishna and take part in his purposes, then we become eligible to go back to the spiritual world. If we can't agree to cooperate with Krishna in this world for his mission, what are we going to do in the spiritual world? Every day Krishna goes out and herds the cows, and we're thinking, why I didn't join this movement to become a cow herder? I got my PhD. I went to the university. And now they want me to milk cows? This is too much. What? You want me to make garlands for Krishna? I'm an engineer. I'll build a bridge here. I'm not going to make garlands. I didn't go to school for 20 years to make garlands. Come on. You want me to wrestle with Krishna? Well, I know karate. I'll knock the guy out. So unless we can actually agree to cooperate with Krishna's mission while we're present in this world and agree to cooperate with Krishna for what he wants, then there's no question of going back to the spiritual world. because there Krishna is the center, and people, the devotees there, they just do what Krishna wants, that's all. They're not interested in doing something creative, or they have a lot more knowledge in this kind of backward, primitive village. I gotta live here forever. There's no running water. My God. Where's the internet? You know, you can't even afford an internet connection here. This place is, you know, barbaric. No, we have to have some appreciation of the wonders of the spiritual world, that it's based upon relationships, not upon technology or so-called material advancement. So unless we can accept that and agree even this world to work in that basis, then we'd be quite disturbed if we went back to the spiritual world and found out that, you know, it was a lot more progressive where I came from. My God, they've been around here eternally and they haven't gotten together even the most basic things here. The only thing they seem to be doing is adoring Krishna. That's all they're doing here. My God, why don't they, you know, adore me a little bit too? So, and Krishna's going to go through this, and if we to become qualified to understand it, we have to dovetail our activities with Krishna's and with Krishna's devotees and his mission. Then we'll understand what bhakti is all about, and that so-called material advancement, technological advancement, whatever, devoid of bhakti, is just like, it has no meaning. Without relationships with Krishna and with Krishna's devotees, then all these things are shravam evahi kevalam. Love, which is the basic principle of relation with Krishna, without that there's no happiness, there's no knowledge, there's nothing. There's simply external, dull energy, seemingly progressing, but going nowhere. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. So I have one question. When and how will we realize how Krishna is beautiful?
Well, you must, how and when? You mean how beautiful? You mean,
I mean
see
yeah,
Krishna
to
directly?
Realize, no, but just his qualities, that they are more, that we see them more, how would I say, personally. That we see how beautiful and...
Well, those things are revealed to us. You have to ask Krishna, I don't know.
I mean, but I understand that through Katha, Krishna Katha, it's sweet. It can be sweeter, and when will it stick with us, you know?
Well, you're here now, so it must have stuck a little bit. As far as coming to the platform of Nishta, steadiness, well, see, throughout the day, how much you're remembering Krishna, and to what extent. And then you can see, think about where you were a year ago, how much you remember Krishna, and how much you remember Krishna now. Then you might take an estimation, how long it's going to take you to do it 24 hours a day. I mean, that's just an estimate, if you're curious. Of course, things, as we progress seriously, then the process goes quicker. Of course, our lives start going quicker too. But the process goes quicker. It's like a snowball going down a mountain. At first, it's a very small little snowball. But as it goes down the mountain of snow, then it takes up, it accumulates and becomes a big, like a mountain of snow. So as we progress, as we become, as our spiritual senses awaken, and we can actually begin to experience Krishna, the ecstasy and the love and the happiness and the taste, the rise of taste, then our enthusiasm goes, and our concentration and our desire to become more and more Krishna conscious progresses. So now we may have a little taste, that's why we're here. But if we hear and then we try to apply a little bit within our lives, whatever we can understand, become maybe a little bit more regulated, come more often, put the mind a little bit more on Krishna while we're hearing and chanting, try to chant a little bit more better, then gradually we'll make some progress. Krishna will reciprocate with every effort we make, and somewhere or another Krishna will reciprocate with us. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.